You ever been in the presence of a giant? Maybe there's been an experience in your life that you thought or felt like it was a giant, something that was overwhelming, a lot bigger than life. I remember when I was a kid growing up in Borneo, our families at least once a year would go to this huge reserve, forest reserve, up in Mount Kinabalu, which is a very beautiful mountain. It's the largest mountain in Southeast Asia. And in this area, this rainforest, were many, many beautiful, beautiful animals, strange kinds of bugs, all kinds of butterflies, and yes, even some very scary animals. The one animal that you did not ever want to meet in the jungle of Borneo was a gaur. Even the name sounds scary, doesn't it? Say word gaur and you go, ooh. If you only knew what a gaur was, right? A gaur is a giant. Well, he's a distant relative of a water buffalo. Now, if you've ever seen a water buffalo, just looking at a regular water buffalo is scary. They have horns sometimes that'll span at least 3 feet, maybe 4 feet. They're big, muscular, big, huge animals. And even the ones that are, quote, tame aren't, well, they have nasty personalities. But a gaur is a distant relative who is totally wild and can never be tamed. And he's bigger and he's nastier. He is absolutely the greatest fear of everyone that lives in the jungles of Borneo. Now, there's a lot of things that live in the jungles of Borneo, like snakes, cobras, bugs that are poisonous, all those things that creep and crawl and make noises in the night. But the gaur is the thing to be afraid of. And I remember we went for this little hike. We'd gotten separated from our parents, and we decided to go down a different trail. And so we were pretending like we were jungle explorers. You know how kids like to do that? Sort of like the Indiana Jones, you know, and you're out exploring the jungle, and you're making your own path through the jungle. And we were following this path down the jungle. It wasn't the one that had been cut for by us, by the forest rangers, but this was sort of a path, I think, that the wild animals went down. And as we were going down this path, we came into this clearing, and in this clearing, we were walking along, and suddenly we noticed some huge, huge hoof prints in the ground. I mean, we were used to seeing animal footprints in the mud and the dirt of the trail, but these things were that big, all right? Now, the regular water buffalo had tracks that were about this big, but these were like 2 and 3 times bigger. Immediately, we froze in our tracks. Immediately, the blood pressure went up. We could feel our hearts beating in our chests. Our eyes got big. We started sweating even more. We turned to each other. We were just little guys. We're talking, 7, 8, and 12 years old. And I was the oldest. And we're standing there on this trail, and we're not saying a word because we know what those tracks are. We look around, and every little sound we heard in the jungle, we knew that that was the gaur. He was going to be after us. And by the way, the gaur is known and has a reputation that if he doesn't like you and he chases after you and you climb a tree, he will stay under that tree until you fall out of the tree, and then he will stomp on you. Okay? They're cousins to the Cape buffalo. And a Cape buffalo will actually stomp a lion to death. Okay, that's how mean these guys are. And hunters have known to have shot at these things and hit them right in the head. And their skulls are so thick, and the horns in front of their heads here kind of protect them. And these crazy gaur will just keep coming at you. They don't give up until they've got you. And they've stomped on you and just trampled you into the ground. And so we're standing there, and we're shaking, and we're frozen on the spot, and we don't know what to do. There's a gaur somewhere. He's watching. I know he's watching, those blood-red eyes from the jungle looking at us, ready to come out and just stomp us to death. And so we're looking at you, and we start walking backwards very, very carefully, very quietly. And we reach in our pockets, and we pull out our little tiny pocket knives. We're going to take this giant on, boy. If he comes after us, we're going to stab him to death, you know. And we made our way back into the jungle, and then without even any warning or notice, we turned and we ran. I don't know, man, our feet barely touched the ground. We ran like chickens, like you would not believe. We ran all the way back to the ranger station. We're panting and we're huffing and we're puffing and we're so tired. And the ranger comes over and says, "What's wrong? What's happening?" We said, "There was a gaur. There's a gaur out in the jungle. There's huge tracks in the trail there. We know there's a gaur." And he looks at us and he goes, "Boys, the gaur doesn't live in this area. We've never seen a gaur in this area. It was probably one of the local water buffaloes. The gaurs live further down in the plains. They don't live up here in the mountains. They don't like it up here. They don't have any food up here. So what you saw were the tracks of just a plain old water buffalo." Isn't that about the truth? Sometimes the giants in our lives get so huge and so blown out of proportion. We make up these things in our minds that become so massive that we freeze in our tracks. We can't move forward. We can't move backward. We're so sure that we're going to be stomped into the ground. We're going to be destroyed. Well, that's the story of Israel. If you turn in 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter, we'll be looking at this story. All of us liked a story about a giant and an underdog, huh? Don't you like that? Don't you like the idea of a giant and then someone else who's just this little Pee Wee Herman, you know? And he's this little guy, you know, and this big, huge giant. We all like the story. Sometimes some of us see ourselves as the giants in life, but most of us, I think, probably relate more to David. I don't know, what kind of giants are in your life? What kind of a giant do you have that seems to be looming over you? It seems to stand over your path to success in life. It stands over your path to finding peace and tranquility in your life. It stands over your path to fulfillment of God's will and God's plan in your life. I got to thinking about these giants. We all face them. I know I have them. Sometimes these giants actually are people. These are actual people who at times sort of dog our lives, you know. They just kind of hound us. They just create trouble at every turn in our lives. They're people that are control freaks or invalidators, power hungry. People who seek to dominate other people, try to control them. And so we feel overcome and we feel hopeless. And like Israel, we're paralyzed. We don't know what to do. Here's this huge giant, this giant of a man by the name of Goliath. And he's challenging the children of Israel. The Philistines are once again harassing the children of Israel. Do you see that reoccurring theme? It seems that the Philistines just will not let the children of Israel live in peace. They are constantly, decade after decade, coming back and harassing the children of Israel. And this time, they're using a little psychological warfare. They've got this guy in the camp. By the way, he has brothers too. But they've got this one guy, this massive, huge guy. He's probably about 10 feet tall. And he has a loud voice. And he's intimidating. And he gets out there and he stands between the two camps of the Philistines and the Israelites. And he shouts threats to the children of Israel and saying, "Hey, any of you want to come out and fight me? Come on out. Let's have it. Let's get it on here and let's see who's the best, who's the strongest, who's God's greater. I'll take on any of you. Come on out." And the children of Israel are sitting in their camp and they're quaking and they're shaking and they're afraid of this intimidator. Sometimes the giants in our lives might be a situation. An enormous situation in our lives that seems impossible. And it's growing by the minute. It's getting worse and worse. It's something that is so huge. It might be a financial problem. It might be a physical problem. It might be your health. Maybe it's somebody at work that just, like I said, dogs your steps, harasses you constantly. Workplace bullies, they talk about them even in the news. So they do exist in our world, don't they? And so how do we then? How do we deal with them? How do we overcome the giants that seem to subdue us, that seem to have us quaking in our boots? Well, there's several things you can do. You can run from them. And there are people that's what they do. Every time a giant pops up in their life, they run from it. Well, you can hide from it. That might work for a while. Maybe you can ignore the giant. You know, look the other way. Don't pay any attention to it. Push it aside. Hide it under something. Bury it. But ultimately, you will have to face the giant. Ultimately, you need to gain the victory. You need to be victorious over the giant in your life. So let's go back to chapter 17. And let's take a look at David, the little shepherd boy. His father's name was Jesse. And one day Samuel showed up on camp. And he said, listen, God has sent me to this home. And he said that I am to anoint one of the sons as the next king of Israel. Well, now, wait a minute. If I have my history correct and if I'm looking at the Bible here, Saul is still alive, isn't he? Saul had been anointed. He was the anointed one. By the way, Saul was a giant himself. Saul was, they said, head and shoulders above everyone else. So he had to be, you know, well, I don't know what the average height was back then, but he might have been close to 6 feet, maybe 6'5" himself. So he was a big guy. And God had anointed Saul as the first king of Israel, but you know how the story goes, folks. He stopped communicating with God. He began to stray away from God. He stopped listening to God's counsel and God's prophets. And slowly but surely, he lost touch with God. And so God was displeased, and God sent Samuel to the house of Jesse to find the next king of Israel. And so Jesse brings all of his sons before Samuel, and he lines them up. Nice looking bunch of guys. And Samuel goes from one to one to the next to the next to the next. And he says, something's wrong here, Jesse. Something's wrong here. It's none of these. It's none of these guys. You have great sons, but this is not the group. Do you have any more sons? And Jesse goes, let's see. Oh, yeah, I do. I do. I have this little punk of a kid, you know, and he's out herding sheep. But yeah, he's not going to make a king. He's a nobody. He's just a little punk, you know. Forget, don't worry about him. Pick one of my older boys here. You know, these are the guys, you know, these are the ones that have some wisdom and some age, and they'll make good kings. No, bring him here. So somebody goes out and gets little David. David comes in, you know, and you can see this scrawny little guy, you know. And Samuel looks at him and says, this is the one that God has anointed to be the next king. And so he pours oil on David's head and anoints him to be the next king. Now that's kind of like a bouquet that's ticking, by the way, if you think about it. You know what a bouquet that's ticking is? It's a bouquet with a bomb in it. Because being anointed the king while the king is still alive and being anointed as the next king is not really a good thing, at least not in those days. And so it wasn't really, it was a blessing. Yes, it was a blessing from God, but immediately it put David in jeopardy. And so David goes back to herding his sheep and he goes, well, that was a great experience. You know, I'm anointed now the next king. I wonder how that's going to happen. Here I am herding sheep. How in the world am I going to get from herding sheep to the palace? God has a lot for David to learn. It doesn't take him long to begin to teach him. So one day Jesse says, David, I want you to run up to the battlefield. Your brothers are all out there, you know, and they're having these battles with the Philistines. I want you to take some food to them. So David takes the food and he runs out to the battlefield. And he gets near the battlefield and he hears some yelling and shouting. He thinks, oh, there must be a war going on. And he gets there and the guys are all kind of in their tent quivering and shaking. And so he starts to talk and ask questions around. What's going on here? What's the deal? What's all the shouting? What's this yelling about? And he looks down in the valley between the two camps, and there he sees this giant of a man named Goliath. Doesn't that sound like a giant's name? Goliath. My neighbors have a Goliath. He's a big, huge, Great Dane, and you could ride him like a horse. And my dog is a smaller dog. And you'd think my dog would have the brains and the sense, you know, to at least pay respect to this dog that's three times her size. Oh, no. I have to pull my dog off of Goliath. So my dog's this aggressive thing that runs out there every time she sees Goliath. I'm going to get, you know. There's this big fight, you know. So David says, listen. And I'm going to tell this story in my words. Listen. This guy is nothing. This guy. And he starts talking like this around the camp. Now listen to what his brothers have to say. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 28. By the way, if you're the younger child in the family, which I am the youngest, all right, you do get a lot of insults thrown at you for some reason. I don't know what it is about being the youngest. And I guess it toughens you up. I don't know. But listen to this insult. David comes in and he brings the food to his brothers and he's happy to see his brothers and he's asking around, what is this, you know, this Philistine, what's this thing going on here? And verse 28, it says, when Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, now listen to this, what have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the desert? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle. Wow. Talk about invalidation. Zing, zing, zing. You know, something about siblings. They love to slap each other around, don't they? Especially when they're young. They just know how to just get right in there into the heart and the soul. They know exactly what to say. They know exactly how to make their sibling feel absolutely rotten. And that's what they're doing here. They are just absolutely, the intention here of his older brother is to level him, just totally level him, flatten him out, make him want to go running back home to daddy. It wasn't just, you know, well, David, really, you're just a young kid, you know, and this guy's kind of too big for you, so why don't you go on home to dad, okay? No, this is, I know you're wicked. I know you're conceited. I know you're this. I know you're that. Get out of here, David. Well, thank goodness David felt the anointing of God in his life. And he's not going to go home. He wants to find out more, so he keeps asking around. Well, pretty soon the word gets to Saul that there's a guy out here, some little punk kid, you know, that's asking questions about Goliath. So he calls him in. And David comes before the king Saul. That must have been quite an experience, knowing in his heart that he'd been anointed to be the next king. That must in itself have been a shaky, scary experience. But the heart of David seems to be quite brave. His brother said he was conceited. Maybe there was a little bit of that too. But here he is. In front of King Saul, the man he's going to replace someday. And Saul says, well, I hear you're asking questions about Goliath. Yeah, as a matter of fact, King Saul, let me tell you a few things. And he tells Saul how he had killed lions, how he had killed bears, how he had protected the flock. Now, I don't know about you, but if somebody came to you and said, guess what, you know what? I am a lion killer. I know how to kill lions with my bare hands. I have killed grizzly bears with my bare hands. I have ripped lions apart. Would you believe that? I don't think Saul believed it for a minute either. But he figures, hey, this is great. You know, maybe we can have a diversion. Maybe we can put off the inevitable just a little bit by sending this stupid little, scrawny little king from the tribe of Jesse. We'll send him out there as bait. Okay, to see how this giant fights. So he puts his armor on him, puts Saul's armor on little David, you know, and you get this picture of this little guy, you know, and the armor weighs more than him, and he's just trying to walk, you know, with this heavy helmet and the shield, and finally goes, this is ridiculous, I'm not used to this stuff. He takes it off, and he says, don't worry about me, I don't need the armor, I don't need the sword, I'm going to go in the spirit of the Lord, amen. Yeah. You know, David went out to meet Goliath, and he picked up 5 stones. And I found in this passage of Scripture that there are 5 principles that are effective in giant slaying. You want to know them? They're there. Okay, let's go through it. Principle number 1, whenever you're up against a giant, whenever you're up against a problem, or whenever you're up against something in your life that's bigger than life, call it by its rightful name. Call it what it is, okay? Don't sidestep, don't minimize it, don't try to fantasize it. Call it by its name, all right? Acknowledge the giants. Acknowledge the Goliaths. Identify the problem. Don't play games. Identify the problem. By the way, that's what most counselors do. And if you have a good friend who's honest with you, that's really all counselors do, is they listen to what you have to say and then they identify the giant. They identify it so that you can stand up to it and you look it in the eye and you can take it on. People that have been to Alcoholics Anonymous know what that's all about. The first thing they do, I've actually been a director or a leader, I guess you would say, of a 12-step group for many, many years. And the first thing you do every time you get together is you stand up and you give your name and the giant in your life. Hi, I'm Glenn Munson, and I'm an alcoholic. You all are saying, well, are you really, Pastor? Hey, let me tell you something. Let me just clue you in here. We label people, you know? And we look in the world around us, we look at the Philistines out in the world and around us, and we say, well, yeah, they're druggies, and yeah, and they're alcoholics, and yeah, they're this, and yeah, they're that. But you know what? Some of the worst addictions are the ones that aren't so obvious. Some of the worst addictions that people have are not found out in the streets, in the alleyways, and in front of the bars. They're not found in the drug dens. They are found, yes, at home, in people's homes. Yes, in Christian homes, and even in the church. Some people are addicted to bullying other people. Some people are addicted to gossip. Some people are addicted to being better than thou. There are all kinds of addictions. Everybody chooses their own addiction. And let me tell you something. I've been around this many, many times, and there isn't a person on the face of this earth that I've ever met, and I've met some pretty saintly people, that doesn't have a drug of choice. Even religion. I said religion. I didn't say spirituality. I said religion. Can become a drug of choice. Okay? If you're doing it for all the wrong reasons, it is a drug. It gives you a high, it makes you feel good, it makes you strong, it makes you powerful, but it's a drug. If you're doing it for the wrong reasons. Okay? I've known people that could quote the Bible like, you know, they memorized the whole thing. They could quote to you every text you can imagine till they're blue in the face. But they were mean, nasty-spirited people. They were unkind. They were proud. They were arrogant. Everybody has their drug of choice. But David calls the giant by its name. He names the problem. He gives it a handle. You see, if you don't name the problem, if you don't call it by what it is, you can't get a handle on it. It slips away. It comes and goes. Either you're high or you're depressed. Or you're here or you're there. But you're always playing a dance. You're dancing around the problem. Until you get a handle on the problem, you can't face it and you can't deal with it. And you can't ask God to deal with it. Okay? You get it? You understand? Verse 36, David identifies. He identifies who this is. And he goes to Saul and he says, listen, I've killed lions and I've killed lots of things. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them. You see, he put a handle on it. He's going to be like one of them. I know by the power of God that I can take this guy. So, the first thing we know is that you have to identify the Goliath, the giant, in your life. Faith reacts. It reacts. When it sees the situation, when it sees the giant. The moment you put a name to the giant or the problem in your life, the challenge, the whatever it is you're dealing with in your life, suddenly that giant shrinks. You know why Goliath shrunk? It's because David said, "This uncircumcised Philistine who defies the armies of Israel, the living God." The minute you put God in the equation, the minute you bring God into the one who is going to face that giant, suddenly you have a power that is far beyond those little pocket knives that you can pull out in your life. Suddenly now, that huge giant has shrunk down to his real size, and God now is the giant in your life. He's the one that's going to take away the problem and help you overcome the giant in your life. Now I know, man, as sure as I'm standing here this morning, there are some in this congregation that have struggled with emotional giants in their lives that are so huge that they're afraid to even open the door to peek in to see if they're still there. Emotional giants. Something in your life, something that did damage in your life way back when in your life, and that giant, you don't want to see it, and so you hide it away. You keep it in a closet. You don't want it to come out because you're afraid of the damage it might cause. It's already hurt your life so bad, but you just keep it hidden away. And you hear it rumbling at times, and you hear it growling at times, and you hear it shouting at times, and you hear it threatening you, and you just keep shoving it away. You just keep it away. Keep it in its closet. Call it by its name. The minute David brought God into the equation, if he'd had a wife, he could have said, "Honey, I shrunk the giant." Right? He's no longer a giant. He's just a little tiny guy, you know? God is so big and so great. God is so powerful. This guy is nothing, not a problem. Don't worry about it. Putting God in the equation suddenly brings the giant down to the average size and maybe even smaller. The second thing, principle that we need to learn from this story, the second stone, if you want to slay giants in your life, the second principle is David ignores the naysayers. Mm-hmm. Did you hear that? David ignores the naysayers. His own brothers. I imagine, well, now listen, David, you're the young one in the family, and I'm telling you, you go home. You get out of here. You should not be here. You need to go home. And if you disobey me, you're disobeying the eldest. You ever had that thrown in your face? Now, if you're the youngest, you probably have. He ignored them. Oh. He ignored the mockery of the people that said, "Oh, look at this little guy. He's going to go out and he's going to take on this giant." The second thing we learn is that faith resolves to do something. Mm-hmm. Okay? When you've added God to the equation, when the giant now no longer is a giant, he's small, and God is great and God is good. Now you, by faith, can resolve to do something about the giant. Yeah? The naysayers. "Well, it'll never work. That's an impossible plan. The odds are against us." Robert Kennedy said that 1/5 of the people all the time are against everything. Yeah? If you're going to base your plan, if you're going to face your giant by taking consensus, you have already lost the battle. If you're waiting for everybody in the church to say, oh, that's the way we all should go, you already have lost. You do not run a business. You do not run a church. You do not run your life on consensus. That is probably one of the most difficult things for any leader, is the consensus vote. Because the consensus vote waffles back and forth. You can never get your hand on a consensus vote because it's always hearsay. It's never real truth. Because people who are naysayers really don't want to be counted. They just want to just yeah, yeah, yap, 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 yap. But they don't want to be counted. They don't want to stand up and be counted. The Chicken Littles of the world, the negative-minded people, the invalidators. 1/5 of the people all the time are against everything. That's the truth. But a man by the name of Ben Carson, I met him one time. Ben Carson was raised in the inner city ghettos of Detroit City in a terrible negative environment, in a hopelessly poverty-stricken environment. And every day he received messages that were negative messages. Just, you know, give up. Just goof around. Get into drugs. Get into fights. Stay away from school. It's never going to get you anywhere. Don't, you know, give up. Society's hopeless. Just give up. But there was a voice that said to him every day, you can do it. You can become successful. You can do. You can follow. You can become what you believe God wants you to become. And that was his mother. Today, Ben Carson is one of the leading, in fact, probably if not the leading, pediatric neurosurgeons at Johns Hopkins University. He has pioneered incredible, incredible techniques for doing brain surgery that other people said, impossible, you can't do it, you'll never be able to do it. And he has done it by the grace of God because he believed that he could overcome the giants in his life. The third stone that you take out of the little bag, put in the sling, the third thing to remember is remind yourself of God's power in your life. Review the past. David did it. You read it. He told everybody, listen, I've killed lions and I've killed bears. I have protected sheep. And I'm just a little boy. But God's given me the power to do that. Remind yourself of how God has led you in the past. So often we have blinders on. We see the giant standing there. And he's bigger than life. He's about to crush the life out of us. And all we can think about is the giant. We're frozen on the spot. What we need to remember is, and what we need to think about, is how God has led us in the past. Review the past. See what God has done. So the third thing is that faith remembers and it reviews God's greatness. The same God that gives you strength to live through and to go through the difficult experiences of your life in the past will be the God who will take you through the present situation in your life. The fourth stone, the fourth element to look at when you're overcoming the giants in your life is this. You can count on God. If you don't remember any of the others before, remember this one. You can count on God. God will come through for you. God is there to lead you, to guide you, to protect you, to keep you, give you wisdom, and give you strength to go through the difficult times, the hardships of your life, the giants in your life. David realized that. I love David's words. You've come to me with a sword, and with a spear and a javelin. Listen to that. But I have come to you In the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. You might want to try that one next time you're standing in front of one of your giants. You might try that. You know, you come with all of your craziness, with all of your little attacks, but I stand here before you in the name of the living God. I'm a follower of the living God. Do you count on God? Do you count on God when the giants in your life are standing before you? David did. And you know the story, how he went out with that little sling. They still use them in the Middle East. Every so often when you see a riot in Jerusalem, you'll see the kids out there with their slings, you know, and they're shooting them at the riot police. You know, they still use them. And they're deadly accurate. Because they use the same kind of sling over in Borneo. They can hit a chicken on the run with a sling. Now you just try that. Y'all think you're really good at a slingshot? Slingshot's a lot easier to aim. You try hitting a chicken on the run with a slingshot. That's hard. Try a sling. That's even harder. Anyways, these guys are deadly accurate. David was deadly accurate. And he hit the giant right between the eyes. And there's this old song. And the giant came tumbling down. Isn't that right? The giant came tumbling down. When the giants come tumbling down in your life, the first thing you want to do, the first natural response is to do a little jig and do a little dance and get all excited and feel really good about it. Don't forget who brought the giant down. That's a time for worship, don't you think? Don't you think it's a little time to do a holy dance before the Lord? Do a little thank the Lord dance, praise the Lord. Don't forget. Don't forget who brought the giant down. It was not David. It was God. And finally, the last stone, the last element that we need to remember when we're taking on the giants in our lives, that once that giant has been slain, move forward. Don't stay where you are. Move forward. Because I can assure you, if you've lived on this old planet as long as I have, there are other giants to slay. And we're going to keep slaying giants until the Lord comes. So get used to it. Just get used to it. Because you're not doing it in your own power, you're doing it in the power of the Lord. You got it? Right? Goliath, you got to know Goliath had brothers, and they were there. Some say that's why he picked up 5 stones, one for each guy. Remember, God is there to see you through. Give him the praise, give him the glory that is due him, and then move on.